One. Another edition of the Let's Go Ricky Rule podcast with Ricky Romero, Josh Tolley, and Beto Duran. And let me apologize to you right now, people. We were supposed to have Tim Raines on today. I messed up on the timing. I forgot that the West Coast time and the Midwest and the East Coast, we all have different time zones. So I messed that up. So I gave Ricky the wrong information. Ricky gave Rock the wrong information. So regardless, though, next week for sure, Tim Raines is going to be on. We apologize to you if you're looking in for Rock Raines. But it doesn't matter, though, because we're still here for you guys every single week. Beto Duran, Ricky Romero, Josh Tolley. Ricky, you don't look a little chipper today. You all right, man? Need some cafecito?
I didn't have a coffee yet. I just got done with the workout and came straight up here. But, yeah, man, I was looking forward to Rock Raines, but I'm still looking forward to it. Next week he called and apologized, and no biggie, man. I mean, I'm glad we still get to do it and go from here.
You tired, though? You look tired, Rick.
A little tired, man. I'm not going to lie. A little tired. It's catching up now, you know, those I think the first few weeks you're like, oh, yeah, I'm good. And then it just catches up. And now it's like having trouble falling asleep at like before the baby came. We were like, oh, yeah, we're in bed at 9:30. Now it's like 10:30, 11. And next thing you know, the little one, the middle one is up at like 5:50 on the dot every day. And it's just like, man. let me close this one. So it's not a bad.
He's a mess right now, Tolley. He's a mess.
Yeah, he's a mess. Yeah, back to back. He acts like he's blaming it on the baby, but I have a feeling you guys have been golfing a lot.
No, we haven't been golfing. I was golfing last week. Oh, I was on golf bender last week. You know, I went down to play Torrey Pines, where the U.S. Open is going to be in a couple of weeks, and I realized I don't belong on that course. I played Monarch Beach and Dana Point. I belong there. That was really nice, real nice. But no, I haven't seen Rick in a couple of weeks, man.
Hey, Beto
doesn't belong any.
Go ahead, Ricky. Finish your sentence. He doesn't belong on any of the golf courses.
If he keeps doing the shit that he keeps doing, trying to be Happy Gilmore, like.
Yeah, that was my next question. What is he doing?
What am I doing? I'm having a good time, bro.
Yeah, but it's, like I mean, come on, a good time.
Yeah,
I knew JT would agree with me.
So what? You know how hard it is to run up and do it like Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I am talented. All right. I am all there. Right. I'm good. Any of that like pristine, know how to behave at a golf course stuff. I don't need that. I don't need that in my life. Now, when I do go to the country clubs, I do tuck my shirt in. I'm fine. I've gotten better. I actually bought golf shoes. I'm getting there.
Oh, okay. That's you're halfway home.
I hope Torrey Pines saw that video and they never allow him there ever again for doing stuff like that.
First of all, Torrey
Pines. I sent a message right away. I was like, dude, how do you disrespect a course like that?
Now,
do it at nine hole course, all you want. That Pico Rivera course where you play, but U.S. Open place, you know, Torrey Pines.
For the record,
you can do the Happy Gilmore at some dog track, but at Torrey Pines, what?
Hey, that's who I am. I am a man of the people. I am doing what
you
the
are.
People would do. And for the record, for the record, that tee box. If you guys want to go on my Instagram, you'll see me doing it. That tee box is at Torrey Pines. That's the tee box that they're not going to use. That's the 610-yard one. So the one that they're going to use in a couple weeks is a tee box before that. So that's the one that's up there by the cliff, by the ocean. They don't even use that tee box. So we went up there. So I beat up a tee box that they're not going to use. I do have some respect. All right?
Okay. I feel better.
Yeah, some respect, not too much. Plus, they charged me $90 up for the cart girl, so I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. It costs more for a round of drinks than it did to actually play the damn course.
They're expensive. Cool.
Hey, you've been to a club in Vegas. I mean, how much is a drink there?
I wouldn't know. I don't know. I got rich friends, so I don't know how much it costs. What's up, Razzo? They always hang out with the people in charge with the credit card from the box. So when I work fights in Vegas, totally, I don't spend any money because I go and hang out with the people who have the expense card, the expense reports. Heck yeah, let's go. Forget that. I ain't doing nothing. Yeah. What's up, Razzo? Yeah. Hanging out. All right. Before we get into what's going on in the show, Tolley, Last week we had a message after the great Tulowitzki interview that we had on the podcast. Go back and listen to it. And people really do believe that the urban legend that I'm saying that Tolly lives in the woods and he has no cell phone service. Like, people are starting to have this image of you really living like by candlelight in the woods, right? Now tell Ricky what you were doing today. What did you do all this before noon today?
Well, so I chopped up a cherry tree today with a chainsaw. I weed whacked for Catherine today around her little flower garden. So I got that done. I came here, do my podcast, and then I go back up the hill to the golf course, and then I'll trim some ditches weed whacking for my buddy over there. And then we have a little league game tonight, and I have a catching lesson tonight. I'm doing the catching lesson. I'm not getting lessons.
Good thing Tulo's not here, or else he would be saying you are getting catching lessons. Man, and by the way, that was a really good podcast. I think that was dynamite. I didn't think that was good. I thought Tulo was going to be a little bit reserved, and he didn't know what he was putting himself into, but he clearly went back and listened to some episodes, and I think that's what made him comfortable.
Yeah.
And, dude, I got a lot of messages and a lot of people saying, like, dude, that, like, you got him to open up like nobody really ever has. And the fact that he told the story about how he retired and all that, that nobody really knew, I thought that was pretty cool, too. So I'm glad he was able to open up and kind of just have fun with it. I that's what I told him. I was like, dude, we have a lot of fun. We just talk shop, and it's nothing crazy. Because he was like, dude, what topics are we going to talk about? Like, don't ask me anything about now, or, like, I don't know anything that's going on now. And I was like, it's not like that. And I think it came out really good.
I thought it was awesome. I too, Ricky, I have friends that listen to this podcast that live here in New York, and they keep telling me, they said, wow, the Tulo one was outstanding. But as I was telling Beto a while ago, it's – they're starting to get interested now. They go back and listen to really all of our other ones, and I keep getting positive feedback. So I do love that.
Yeah, we are. Make sure you guys rate, review, leave all the messages. We do see them all also on the Let's Go Ricky Roll Instagram. Got this message from Ross Marney, our listener in Scotland, an OG listener, and I sent him the stickers of back last year. Ross sends his message and says, Tulo was so dope, man. He has that many O's in there. Love Tolly on the podcast. Also, great addition. There you go, Tolly. The stories about the haunted hotels. Guys and the clubhouse attendants. Love him. Love that stuff. Everybody hears the stories about the game in general, but it's great to hear the minor league stuff, the clubhouse stuff, the bus journeys, the plane stories. Love it all. Keep it up. Ross in Scotland. So appreciate you, Ross Marney, listening to us in Scotland. So that's what we're here for. We're here to give the people the behind-the-scenes stuff about what it's like in the big leagues. And I do know this, that the other day, a friend of mine sent me a message, said he had his baseball team in Central California listening to it. They were listening to the Alan Trejo episode. And he also has these kids. So we got high school kids at Roosevelt High School in Delano, California. Their baseball team is listening to it. And he said these kids are like, dude, this is awesome. This is what it's really like to hear from those kind of guys. So we got Scotland. We got Central California. We got everything. We got it all. So here on the podcast for you guys. So you feeling good, Tolly?
I'm feeling great. That fires me up. Hey, we might have to clean our language up a little bit, knowing that high school kids watching this.
Dude,
that's what I was thinking, too. I think I told Cara after I was done with the Tulo, I was like, man, like, maybe I have to tone down the cussing. But sometimes you just like it. You feel like you're in a clubhouse, right? And you feel you know, what we're going for, and it just comes like, it's not like it's pre-planned or I plan on saying this many cuss words, but it's like, it's a shop. And I feel like that makes the guests feel comfortable too, because Tulo's dropping F bombs and it's just like,
yeah, it doesn't feel rigid. Well, that's what I said. I felt like I had like deja vu. I felt like I was sitting in the cold tub drinking a freaking, Blue Light after a baseball game with the guys, four or five guys today. I said, that's exactly what it felt like last week, and I love that about it.
Now, let me ask you this, Tolly. How, because I went back and listened to it when I was running the other day. Yeah, I'm training to do the LA Marathon, Rick. In November, I'm going to do it. So, man, that's stupid. Anyways, I was listening to it. How did you and Tulo become so tight like that, where he can just say, hey, you're going to wear it today, and you know what's going on? Because you're a pro's pro, Tolly, but how did that bond come out?
Our lockers were very close to each other in Toronto. So I mean, we get there at noon, 12:30 every day, and you just sit there and you talk, and like that's what we did for the first hour and a half that we were there. We go get lunch, come in there, sit, talk about last night's game, talk about today's game, and I just built the relationship with him. And I've spent the many evenings after games in his room, having a couple beers, talking about the game, because we connected, because that's what we both like to do that. And there was not a whole lot of that going on in the game, you know, even as of 2015 and 2016. But he was one guy that wanted to talk baseball, eat, sleep, breathe the game. And I think that's how we built the bond and relationship that we have.
Same with you, right, Rick? That kind of way?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, me and him go way back from our freshman year till up until now. We had an instant bond, and it took a while, because when I got to Team USA, we had just won the World Series, and I had talked to him before, but not really. Like, we just competed against each other. And I remember when I showed up to the hotel, I met the team in North Carolina or South Carolina, I don't remember. And I remember he was rooming with Cesar Ramos, because they were both college teammates, and Cesar's like, oh, this is too low, Ricky. That was the first formal introduction, and he was like very like how you saw him in the podcast, where he's like, I don't care, like, I want to destroy my enemy. It's almost like it was like that, and they're like, whoa, dude, we're teammates now, you know, like, that rivalry of the Long Beach Fullerton matchups that we had. And then next thing you know, we hit it off. Like I mentioned in the podcast, we roomed together, and we just grew closer and closer. That junior year, I remember when we got drafted, we were calling each other like, congratulations. And then he called me first, because I was drafted before him. And dude, it was just that our bond just continued to grow. And then obviously once he got to the big leagues, he became a superstar right away. And for me, I don't like bugging people when they're in the middle of doing their thing. So yeah, I mean, it just, you know, we faced each other in the big leagues, like I said, and next thing you know, we just, you know, he ended up with the Jays, and Jays fans were happy, and they got out of him, you know?
Yeah, and it was like, when you tell me who we're going to have on, Rick, I'm always like, all right, cool, no problem. I've been doing this a long time. I'm not intimidated by interviewing anybody. When you told me Tulo, I was like, fuck. Like, I don't know this guy. He doesn't really like the media. He doesn't do interviews. He's super intense. And when you're doing it on a podcast and everybody's on their computer, there's like a little bit of a delay. I'm like, I honestly didn't think it was going to be good, but I'm going to go with it. And then we, like, get people behind the scenes. Like, before we come on the show, we talk, like, for what, 3-4 minutes? And he's like, yeah, I've been watching you. You do this, this, and this. I'm like, damn, you did your research on me? Like, oh, man. I'm like, this is going to be one of those days. I honestly thought the podcast was going to be, like, 20 minutes, and then he was going to hang up on us. Because he's so intense on it. No, because it's like, okay, what more do you guys want? And then all of a sudden, he's opening up. Yeah. He even had a smile. And I'm like, but he is a nice guy. You can just tell. But that's just his demeanor. And I'm like, dude, this guy was awesome.
He talked about a guy who loves baseball like nonstop, and you know, to be doing it at the college level, that's a whole different beast from what I've heard. You know, it's a job that's 24/7 for the whole year. You know, if you're playing and after your season, you're recruiting, and it's just nonstop, and he loves it, man. He told me, he's like, I want to be the fucking Nick Saban of college baseball. And I feel like if he sets out to do that, he's going to go and do it.
Dude. Yeah, I was going to say, don't be surprised.
Yeah.
One thing that when I went back and listened that caught me, because while we're doing the podcast, I'll write down notes on like what I want to edit and stuff like that. But what caught me was when I think one of you guys asked him if they knew those kids on his team at Texas, if they knew who he was, like how good he was. He was like, no, not really. He didn't say it in a cocky way. It was just more of, no, because they're kids. They don't really pay attention to what's ahead of them. But like that attitude from him was like, it's cool. I don't need to tell you who I was. Like, I don't need to show you my baseball card. Because how many guys do we know that tell you everything? It's like, dude, you got drafted in the 60th round and you never got to pass A-ball or spring ball, and you're like an instructor now, hey, right?
You know what's funny? I don't know if you ever met him, Josh. It's a funny story. You know who was like that? Jim Palmer.
I met Jim Palmer.
What would he do?
Oh, dude, I remember the first time I was a rookie. and he's down in BP. And you know how we totally, you know, we stretch on the third base side in Baltimore, and yep. while they're hitting BP. And he walked down, and somebody was like, "Hey, this is Ricky Romero, Jim Palmer." And he goes, "Jim Palmer." He drops that, like, his stats, and he's like, "I'm a Hall of Famer," and whatever, whatever. And then he's like, "And by the way, here you go. Let me help you." And he grabs my hat and tries to bend it, because I used to wear a flat bill. And I was like, I kind of like jerked my head, and I was like, don't do that, man. I don't care who you are. Like, don't do that."
That's great. Yeah, Jim Palmer.
I say that, but I kind of jerked my head. I was like, nah, man.
Flat bill, bro. Flat bill.
But yeah, he was like, I think annoyed that I had a flat bill. And he's like, "Let me help you with that." And he like tried to grab it and bend it. And I was like, and I kind of yanked my head. It's just funny. Like, it just brought that story came back right now that you said Tulo doesn't care about it. Like,
yeah,
if you know him or his stats or what he did in the game, it's like he's just there for those kids. But yeah, I just remember that story. That
was I've heard that Palmer story too, where he tells people, like, especially rookies, Hall of Famer, Orioles, blah, blah, blah. Oh, dude,
yeah. But
yeah, I've heard that.
Ricky, I
would do it too. Yeah, oh no, I'm Beto Durant, Emmy Award winner. What? Yeah. Shoo.
Well, he walks around. He walks around the batting cage while the visiting team's hitting, and it is funny. I mean, you could get Jim Palmer for a day. You're gonna miss batting practice.
Hey, you know who I saw there hitting once? Batting practice at this was in like 13. Deion Sanders, dude, he was freaking mashing at Camden that year that I was there. It was my it was in 13. That was, I think, it was my last series of the year, last time I played in big leagues. But yeah, I mean, he was. I just remember that right.
He was
now,
taking BP. He was like 10 years Deion done.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Let me ask you this though. All right, I'm gonna ask a dumb question here. Now, batting practice. For the media, we're not allowed to go anywhere near the cage. We have to stay on the warning track, and you have to stay behind, and like, or in the dugout area. Like, you don't go anywhere near the cage. You just know, like, hey, don't go there. Even if you're called over there, because one time Manny Mota called me over, and I was like, it was like, felt like Field of Dreams, where it's like, you don't want to go onto the grass area. I'm like, no, kind of no, but I walked over there, and then as soon as I got done with the conversation, I walked right back. But the old school guys, I saw Reggie Jackson do this a lot. They walk out there, and what are they telling you guys during batting practice? Because these older guys are advisors. They talk to everybody. What is going on?
Well, there, Beto, you know where I used to hit the ball when I played here down over in right center field. That's where I used to hit them.
Is that what it is?
Some of it. I mean, some of it's good. Some of it's good if you can get some, like, real baseball knowledge, but most of them – but, you know, tell a story about when they hit a home run in a certain ballpark or, yeah, when I played. And that's fine. I love those stories. I soak them up. They never bother me. They bother a lot of guys, though. I do know that.
Oh.
Okay. You can hear
it. It brings you to another story that Josh used to do in Buffalo. Our pitching coach was Bob Stanley. Hey. You know who Bob Stanley is, right, Beto?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Bob Stanley, pitcher for the Red Sox. He was on the mound when
big dude.
Yeah.
When Bill Buckner missed a ground ball.
Yeah.
So every time at the end of batting practice, he would be like, "Steamer, steamer, steamer. Hold up, one more." And then they hit him a ground ball, and the ball would go under his glove, and he'd go, "Oh."
I thought we told this story already.
No.
Well, to all the listeners, if we told the story, I
who cares? I do, tell it again.
I'm going to tell it again. So,
hell yeah.
Ricky's right. We would do ground balls beforehand and before batting practice. And Marty Brown would hit a ground ball, and Mike Nickias was he would be the base runner and act like he was Mookie Wilson. And I would go to first, and I'd let the ball go between my legs, and Steamer would get so hit. He would be screaming at me and Nickias, and he's yelling at Marty Brown. Oh, he's pissed. He's a parent. We used to tell him, "Steamer, you were never going to get over anyways. You would not have beat Mookie to the base." "Oh, bullshit, I wouldn't have." Like, you know how he is. So here, listen to the story. So we go to Fenway Park. I get called up. We go to Fenway Park. Adam Lind, I think, Lindy hurt his back or something. Somehow, where Gibby asked me if I could go play first base, and I played first base in 2007. That was the last time I played. So Fenway Park, Casey Jansen's pitching. Shane Victorino's hitting the tying runs on second base. So Casey Jansen's going to throw Victorino cutters into him, right? I'm thinking, well, here comes the ball. Just get ready. We're in Fenway Park. Sure enough, he chops a ball to me, and instead of just backhanding it, it was a little bit in the hole. I shuffle my feet to, like, chest it up, and it goes right between my legs. And
no!
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I remember watching that.
So my locker at Fenway Park was always like kind of tucked in the corner a little bit, and Gibby's office was just was a shout. Like Gibby could yell at me and say, so I'm in there and I'm pissed. I'm like, holy shit, I just lost our team in the game. And my phone is above my locker and just buzzing like crazy. I thought, Jesus, who keeps calling me? So I look at it and it's Marty Brown and Bob Stanley trying to get a hold of me. So all of a sudden, Gibby says, hey, JT, come on in here. I thought, well, I guess I'm out of here. I that's what I assumed. Well, he had Steamer on the phone. And Steamer, I can't even – I don't mind saying a few curse words on here, but I cannot even express the amount of curse words that came out of this guy's mouth after that ball went between my legs.
What did he say? What did he say?
You no good son of a bitch. You deserve that. That's what you get for spending two months making fun of me at first base. Your ass should be back in the minor leagues. I mean, he blew me up good. And hey, Gibby, he's in the office. He's just dying laughing. And Gibby didn't know the backstory, so he was wondering didn't understand what was going on. So then I had to tell Gibby the backstory. Gibby thought it was great,
dude. This
Steamer was sensitive. He didn't like that. Ricky, you remember? He used to get so mad.
It was the '86 World Series,
and he was always like, "I'm the one that had to face the media and this and that, and they left me out to dry."
Yeah,
you know, he was like, on the side, he's like, "What people don't know is that nobody wanted to talk to the media, and I had to step up and do it, and it's fucking bullshit." And had to get him going on that, man. I never wanted to touch that subject, but these guys would get him. I mean, these guys were Bob Stanley. I mean, what were they throwing? Totally like 200 innings, right?
As yeah.
Believers? Yeah. Yeah.
Like something
very outrageous numbers.
Yeah. Tony, you weren't even born when that happened, right? 86?
October. Yeah, I think I was born because.
Well, what year were you born?
I was born in 86, and I was born October 28th. It was right then. No, maybe I wasn't born yet. No, because
no, you were.
The parade. No, because the Mets parade took place like on my birthday or the day after.
So here's the thing. That's why it's cool. That's why baseball is awesome, because you have these veterans, and like this part of what you guys are talking about that gets lost. You weren't born when this happened to this man. The most important play in his career. Stanley had an excellent career in the major leagues. He was a dealer. 20 yeah. years later, or what, 25 years later, some punk-nosed kid from Indiana is messing with him in what the most painful memory of his life. He thought he was going to win the World Series. And no, your punk ass is there doing this to him, messing with the big old smile, and he has to wear it because he had to wear it the entire time, and he couldn't wait. So you're in the big leagues, you boot this, and instead of saying, damn, we lost, he's like, no, let me call this fool, and I'm going to get there. Yeah. You don't answer. He calls the manager of the major league team to just yeah. rub it in. That's what baseball's about, right? That's what really yeah. matters, that That's camaraderie.
Yeah, it is. Damn. That's what it's about.
Yeah, man, and a lot of cool things happen in BP like that. Like you said, Beto, that the media doesn't see, especially when you're at home and there's no really media out there. You're by yourself with your team. So, yeah, man, I mean, a lot of cool stuff happens like that. If these guys get into competitions, hitting, and they're screaming and yelling and ground balls. And meanwhile, pitchers are just like getting a tan over there, so rolling up. And these guys hate everything. Position players hate pitchers. When like, if we're shagging, we're in the way. If we're not shagging, go get the fucking ball. So it's always like,
that's true, Ricky. I gotta give it to you. We get so mad because pitchers used to shag, and now they don't shag. Now Shay because they have to stay off their feet so they don't get too tired.
Well, hey, Mariano got hurt. Mariano got hurt. Shaggy, remember? He busted his knee.
Yeah, but I used to love Shaggy. I freaking on the road, Yankee Stadium, Boston, all dude. I was a power shagger. Like anywhere, any stadium. I just enjoyed it. I also always made sure that I stayed out of the way. But there's some times where you get in the way and position players give you the eye. Like, what are you doing, dude? Like, I'm out here trying to get work. What are you doing? You know, and if I miss a pop up or something, the hitting coach was all over me, and he's like, "And you want to play the outfield? You're fucking crazy. Get out of here, man. You stink." So it's just always like. Yeah, we're in the way somehow, some way, and these guys hate it. Yeah. But I don't know now. Yeah, I mean, obviously now they don't shag. But when we were shagging, yeah, man. Like if you get in the way, if you especially a ball in the gap, and a guy's reading it, and here comes a pitcher trying to make the play, trying to be cool, and you get in the way, dude, it gets serious.
Well, totally. You weren't here when we had a Kevin Bijou on, and Kevin told the story how he's at Wrigley Field and the ball smacks him in the face, and Sammy Sosa's picking him up and takes him into the. To the batting cage, and Jeff looks at him like, his dad Craig looks at him like, "Well, you should have caught the ball." Like his face is all busted up, and Sammy Sosa bringing him in at the tunnel at Wrigley Field, like, "Get out of the way, kid."
Yeah, what are you doing? I mean, that's what I miss. I miss the ball busting, and that is, I told Tool that the other day. Actually, I said last week's episode made me miss the game because I miss. Those yeah. types of conversations and that kind of ball busting because you truly can't give it anywhere.
Yeah. And in a good way, right?
In a great way. Yeah, absolutely. Y'all heard how Tulo blew me up and I just wear it. I just take it. It's fun.
And there's certain guys you can do that with too.
Right. You got to know. You have to know your people.
Yeah, you're not there's doing that.
There's some guys that take it the wrong way or want to fight or – you know, or they don't talk to you anymore. You just got to be able to, I was always kind of just the one that, Ricky, you know.
Ricky, you're Switzerland, man. You get along with everybody. Everybody loves Ricky. You're super nice. And that's a great quality in you. Me and Tully, we're going to go and go after people.
Nah, totally.
I come in hot.
He come in hot. He would take it. He would,
But Tully, at the same time, they're just jealous of you because you get to play every 5 days.
Yeah, that's what they're just pissed off. That's what Tulo said. They're pissed because I would just dick around for 4 days and then play it one day and then dick around for four more days. Hey, the best part was I should have asked Tulo this. The best part was the day I played, though, I was like stone cold, like headphones in. And I was doing it more as a joke because I used to make fun of starting pitchers that do that exact program. They goof off for 4 days, and then when it's their start date, you're not even allowed to talk to them. So I'd walk around and be like, "No, nobody can talk to me today. I'm playing." Hey, Ricky, say that's not true, Ricky. Say that's not true.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I was the opposite. I never wanted to be like stone cold, like don't talk to me. I was.
Yeah.
It's just another day in the show. Let's go. You know, like I would lock it in from when I'd walk into that training room and it was time to stretch and put on my uni and walk out to the tunnel. That's when I would lock it in. But prior to that, man, I was shooting the shit with everyone. And it's funny because position players will come up and they're like, "Oh, you're pitching today. Sorry. And I'm like, no, don't worry about it. What are you going to do 3 hours before the game? Like, are you ready? That's too much energy to waste, in my opinion, as a pitcher. If you're locking it in at 4 o'clock when the game's at 7 o'clock. It's like, pump the brakes.
There's a time and place when you can get going. Like I told you, Ricky, the story about where Dwight Howard's first time with the Lakers and he's in the locker room eating Chicken McNuggets and like bullshitting with the media like an hour and a half before the game and Kobe walks by and just headphones on and looked at him like just looked at him, shook his head, and Dwight kept on laughing. Whoa, whoa, whoa. And I was like, "Oh, this isn't going to work well." That was like the first month of the season. I was like, I think I even told you, Rick, I'm like, something ain't going to work right. And sure enough, Dwight's like, "How are you guys doing? What app do you have on your phone? Blah, 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 blah." And I'm like, "Dwight, this isn't fucking Orlando, bro. This is the Lakers. Like, step it up a little bit, clean it up." And I'm like, "I shouldn't even be here, but Dwight's going to talk to us. Okay, let's go." Because you guys know this. The moment one guy talks to the media in the clubhouse, everybody congregates around him. And it's like, we have nothing, nowhere else to go. So,
hey, no, that brings me to this. It's a funny story too. I mean, we were in Buffalo too, and I remember Joshua laugh at this story because as loose as he is, as calm as he is, or as like, you know, funny as he is, I was pitching and I wasn't, you know, like I said, I was in Buffalo. I wasn't doing very well, but I was locked in this game. And Josh, all right, yeah, Josh had a little bit of trouble catching, and Mike Mickey just came up to him and was like, "Josh, like, this is what you got to do to handle." And dude, he was like, "Not now, Mike, not now. I can't fucking catch the ball, not now." And I was like, "Whoa!" Like, on the side of Josh.
Yeah, I couldn't catch the baseball. I couldn't block it. I couldn't catch it. The thing was, it was the movement on the pitches were just all like. The moves were so big, and I just couldn't catch the ball. And I must have – how many I missed, Ricky? Probably three or four in a row. And then
it was one of those rare games that I had that were good in Buffalo – that was good in Buffalo. And Josh was having trouble catching it, and I was like, dude, don't worry, man. Don't worry. Like, don't worry. Man. Don't worry. Josh, it brings me to this. Did you ever have a game like that in the big leagues where you were like, oh, my God, my God?
Well, I mean, I caught RA. Yeah. So I had a lot of those games where – I mean, I remember in Houston very well. I was like lost. It was like nine pitches in a row. I was just batting down, and maybe I've told this story as well. But Joe West was the guy that was behind the plate, and he called time, came in front, and goes, "God damn, you gonna catch any of these today?" Like that. And that was kind of the icebreaker for Joe. But it was one of those games where I wasn't sure if I could ever even do it. I was changing stances. I was on one knee. I was on two knees. I was like halfway standing up. I just couldn't catch it. And I believe me, I've had more of those days than not.
But that was a knuckleballer, right? So that's a different world.
What about a conventional guy? Not with a conventional guy, really. I mean, Ricky's stuff that day was just all over. I mean, it was moving so much. You would think it would be in one spot. They would just take off and boom, sink down hard. Oh, it just nicked my glove right at the bottom of the zone.
And him and Mike Mickey are like our best of friends. And you know, he was trying to help him out. And Josh wasn't having it.
He patted me on the back. He says, "It's okay, man. It's okay." I lost it.
And Tolly, I understand your frustration with Ricky because when Ricky was almost making that comeback, his throwing partner was me. So he would throw from about 90 feet and just all of a sudden cut. And man, I can catch, but I'm like, I'm not used to this. So, yeah.
You get hurt.
No, not me, bro.
Please.
Yeah. There was a fence behind me. I moved. I would move. We would literally play on a track, and it was like the plastic, the fencing around it. As soon as I saw it kind of cut, I was bailing out of the way. Mind you, I'm standing up, so I know what's going on. I was ready to throw, bro. I was ready to go to the Atlantic League. The noodle was feeling good for me.
I can get you a job there if you want one.
We're ready to go. Oh, where you at? Oh, Ricky, there you go. All right, hold on. Did I freeze? No, we're good. All right. Okay, so this brings me up to what I actually want to talk about. See, this is why, even if we don't have a guest, we're still good because the stories are so freaking good. Marco Favela has a good question for you, our graphic designer. How hard is it to work with multiple pitchers? How much do you connect with them?
One thing I felt I took pride in was spending time with the starters and the relievers, right? The luxury I had being a backup catcher was I could be out in the bullpen during the game and catch and get to know them on a personal level. So from that perspective, I had a great relationship with most of them. There was always one or two guys on the staff that always gave you fits, but that's just kind of how it goes over the course of the season. Now, I will say this. One of the hardest things to do, doing what I did, catching a knuckleball, was when, let's say RA goes six innings, and then all of a sudden they bring Aaron Sanchez out of the bullpen who's throwing 100.
Oh, fuck.
That was always the hardest. Yeah, that was the hardest.
And it was sinking, too.
Power sinkers. That was a guy. Ricky, I've had days with Sanchi where I felt like that. It's like, holy shit, I can't even catch the ball because it's just sinking and running so hard. And it just takes off, and it's heavy, it's hard.
That's right. That's right. I mean, it's not like RA was throwing complete games, so it had to have been you're catching up all game, and then this guy comes in throwing 97 plus. I bet the first pitch was like, whoa.
Yeah, so if you go back, and I'll guarantee if you were to go back and find, like, live on-field cams, and let's say RA gets hooked with 6 1/3, right? And then all of a sudden here comes somebody that throws a billion out of the bullpen. I switch my gloves out. I catch my first pitch from both knees down because my eyes are not adjusted. And it takes every bit of warm-ups, it takes a few pitches into it to get used to it. Yeah.
No way. I never thought about that.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
So, okay, this goes another weird question. How many gloves did you have?
Two. One conventional glove and then one knuckleball glove.
Like, how big is a knuckleball glove?
The model, it's a women's softball catcher's mitt. Is how do I explain it? It's called the Pro Spark. Maybe if I remember next week, I'll bring it on. That's good. Yeah. I'll send you a picture for the Instagram.
So do you go and now what about when you put on the conventional glove? Does that feel weird after using the women's?
It feels weird. Yeah, I mean, I use a peach basket. That's and then my tiny little glove. Yeah, that's hard.
Tully, you know what? This is why, you know, we appreciate you, Tully, because you admit that, damn, it's freaking hard. Like, okay, like, oh, no, it's okay. I can do this. I can do that. No. You know? So what's harder, chopping down a cherry tree in the morning or catching RA?
Catching RA. I am a mess. I'm a master at cutting up cherry trees.
And people don't know, RA was a perfectionist too, man. Like, he wanted his shit clean behind the plate. Like, he didn't want pass balls. I watched him throw a few bullpens in 2013 or 14, and you could just tell he was like, he knew how to make a knuckleball move, which was even more impressive. He knew what he wanted to do with the knuckleball. Like, he would have totally set up in a way, I'm going to do this with this one, I'm going to do that with that one. And I'm like, really? Dude, all that does is spin. And this guy's just sitting back and just sucking it in like a vacuum. That's crazy.
Totally. Another dumb question. Wherever RA went, did you go with him? Was that kind of like the package deal?
Yeah, I mean, it only happened once in our career. We got traded. We got traded from the Mets to the Blue Jays. And I think that was part of the deal to do that. That they wanted somebody that had experience in the event that JP couldn't do it or whoever was coming couldn't catch him. So that was kind of how it worked.
Wow.
And it was Josh and Mike Nickias came with Josh, because if Josh went down, Nickias was the next guy to catch R.A. Dickey, and he could catch R.A. too. So, yeah, man.
Nickias could catch him good.
Really?
They both came together on that deal.
So it usually it's a player to be named later. No, it's the catcher to be named later. That's who it is. It's Tully's coming through.
Catcher and R.A.
So when Tuno's talking shit to you, like saying, oh, that he put you in his bag and he gave you a career, he kind of did.
Well, okay, hold on. Let's debate this real quick. I've talked in depth about this with people. Okay, here's the deal. I'm playing every day. I'm playing every day for the New York Mets at the time. 2011, 2012, I'm catching a ton, right? I get traded to Toronto. Alex signs me to a major league contract, pays me, which was unbelievably nice of him. And then I get optioned to the minor leagues. At that moment, I then became like a specialty catcher. So maybe if I didn't get traded, I would still be catching for the New York Mets. What do you think?
Would you be on one knee? That's the question. Would you be doing the one knee?
I have no idea. I might be on two knees. I might not be able to walk.
Hey, Marco has this other good question right here. How does R.A. Dickey ask you to be his catcher? Like, hey, want to be my catcher forever?
Yeah, how'd you come about being another catcher?
Let me tell you, that's not how that went.
Tully, you're the best. Okay. You're the best, right. Tully.
Here's how it went. 2010, I got called in the office at spring training. Terry Collins, skipper, I think? Terry Collins wasn't the skipper.
Jerry Manuel
might have been.
2010 Mets? Okay, I'll figure. Anyways, go to the start. I'll get you.
Yeah, regardless. The skipper called me in. No, it definitely wasn't Terry. It had to be Jerry. So I get called into the office. They said, hey, we just signed this knuckleball catcher. You're going to go to AAA to start the season. They told me this in spring training. They said, unless somebody gets hurt, then you'll probably be the guy. So they said, we signed this knuckleball guy. Why don't you run around and learn how to catch him just so you don't have an off day in AAA, and then you get to learn how to catch a knuckleball. So I did that. I took that advice. I followed RA every single day in spring training, and I just played catch with him. I caught all of his bullpens. I kind of hogged it a little bit, right? And it worked out. It worked out as to I was fortunate enough to learn how to catch him. And then in 2010, RA got called up to the big leagues, which then in turn put me back in the big league. So, you know, it's six to one, half a dozen of the other. But I do feel as if so, Marco, that's how that came about. But I do feel as if, like, you often wonder, if I wasn't a specialty catcher, would I have been an everyday catcher? You don't know. I mean, nobody knows that. I do it just to butt balls, but I think it's funny.
It would have been you and Yachty competing right now.
Jesus, most games caught in the history of baseball. And Yachty.
But that kind of says a lot about who you were as a player, too, totally, where it's like, hey, whatever you tell me to do, coach, I'm going to go and do it because you want to go and figure things out. And I'm looking at the 2010 Mets roster, and it was Jerry Manuel. Rod Barajas was 34 years old.
Rodrigo!
Right? Henry Blanco, 38 years old. Hank White, you're not messing with Hank White. He's 38 years old. They're not going to go and chase after it. 23-year-old Josh Tolley is going to do what you got to do to stay on the team, right?
Oh, you betcha.
Henry Blanco came to Toronto too the year in 13, right, Josh?
Yeah.
He was in spring training. Yeah. And, dude, it was funny because Josh would always bust his balls. Hey, Hank, come on, man. Let the young kids play already. Go retire. Yeah. You're taking up a roster spot. Look at these young kids. We want to play too. We want to play in the big leagues. It's time for you to go, man. Henry was awesome, man. What a great dude that guy was.
Henry
is. He's obviously still coaching now, I believe, in the big leagues.
Yeah, I think with is it Washington?
I think so. I think that's what it is.
He's a open coach, right?
Yeah. Hey, let me tell you, that dude, he taught me so much. I learned that year in 2010, I just sat and picked his brain every day. And he would have me in tears, but his baseball IQ, obviously. I mean, he caught Greg Maddux for a living, right? Like, his baseball IQ is through the roof. And just learned so much from him. But I had a good relationship with him, and I would always bust his balls. I'd say, damn, Hank, come on, let the kids play. I said, enough of your old ass. Get out of here. But he said, yeah, baby.
Yeah, he's at – you're right. And Chamo, man, Chamo, Venezuelan. He's actually currently the Nationals bullpen coach right now. He had a long career, finished up with the Mariners in 2013. Hank White.
I've always said this.
We should get him on. Get him on. He ain't got nothing to do.
If I have a pitching coach in the bullpen, what better than a veteran guy who knows who was a catcher, who knows a pitching staff? Like, what better guy to have down there than a guy like him? And it's cool that you see, you know, it's not always just pitching guys or guys who have a pitching background. It's actually a catcher who caught in the big leagues for a long time. So I think that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, we'll get that. That was a good squad for you. Justin Turner was on those 2010 Mets. He had four at bats. Yeah, go figure. Tolley, here's another one for you. People love Tolley. I told you. When I was a kid watching you, I always thought you had a massive Southern accent. Maybe it was a chewing tobacco. Southern man, Tolley?
Bubblegum. Bubblegum.
Yeah?
Bubblegum or sunflower seeds.
That's it, right? No chaw? No Big Chief like they said in the sand?
Unless we needed some hits, then I would. But only if we needed hits. throwing a rally chew for the guys.
There you go. Now, see, this was fun right here. See, I told you guys, just do the show. People love it. We need it. We're here for you every single week, 10 o'clock Pacific. Next week for sure, Tim Raines. We already locked it in. Time-wise, everything's locked in. He has the link, so we will have Tim Raines live next week. Hall of Famer Tim Raines. And, Tolley, did you hear the shout-out we got on Sportsnet last week?
Oh, from Hazel May.
Hazel May?
Yeah.
Followed us, watching the show. Appreciate Hazel May.
Yeah, that's huge. Hazel's good.
Yeah. And then yeah, Ricky goes on Sportsnet with – who do you go on with, Rick?
With Jamie Campbell.
Yeah.
They said that they were – or Shai Davidi off air said – he's like, hey, man, it's on my things to do. I want to make sure I listen to that episode. Again, these guys were – you know, from the messages I got, they were just like, man, you're getting more out of these guys than we ever did. Same with Bautista. When we did that episode, it was the same thing. Like, dude, you're getting these guys to talk and feel comfortable. And you know, I'm like, hey, the mic is theirs when they come on.
Right, but they trust us. They trust us, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Guys, they know that there's going to be no nonsense, no bullshit. It's very black and white. They know what we're about. If they don't feel comfortable in something, they'll just say it. They know. I had the sense of Tulo. Like, Tulo felt so comfortable that, yeah, like, nobody's going to ask any stupid questions. Nobody's asking any hard questions. We're going to talk. And this is what – the thing about it is, reporters would get more out of baseball players if they just open the floor a little bit. Instead of saying, hey, how did you feel tonight? I felt like shit again. How about that? Is that what you're looking for?
Kind of, yeah. Most of the time, yeah. And like, that's some of the things that I do when I talk to young kids. And I tell them, like, look, young reporters, be a person first. Part of the reason why I'm, you know, knocking my own wood, but like successful is because I'm a person first. And then you have to build that relationship. You can't just come in cold and be like, hey, why'd you suck tonight? Like, you got to build that up to where we're going. That's why, you know, Ricky and I hit it off years ago, or people who I deal with. I mean, I also had guys I don't like and guys that don't like me. But, hey, there's a reason they're not in the major leagues anymore. And I'll tell you who he is. He's the outfielder. Anyways, it's always the 4A guys, right, Tolly? It's always the 4A guys.
But you also have to understand that the one thing I always said, the media has a job, and just be respectful of that too. You know, just be respectful of people that they got a job to do. Yes, they're going to ask them questions sometimes, but just deal with it. And I feel like for me, even, you know, when I was at the top of the top and the lows of the low, I was the same with them. You know, it was never like a, why are you asking me that question? It was like, sometimes I feel like, and you would know, but sometimes it comes from the network itself, right? I mean, like, whoever they're saying, hey, ask these questions, and they have to ask them. And as dumb as they sound sometimes, I feel like it's just part of their job.
Well, I'll say this, because people say playing in New York is so hard, and it is. Don't get me wrong. New York media beats you up. They can chew you up and spit you out. But the one thing that I learned was, and Jay Horowitz, that would be a great guy to have on
here. Oh,
Jay had taught me at a very young age, getting into the major leagues, that accountability, be there, tell the truth. And I think there's no truer statement than being accountable. When you shit down your leg, come and stand in front of the cameras, take your lumps. Because if you don't do that, these people, they will chop you up into pieces. If you do that, they're more apt to being nice, I guess.
It's nice.
I don't know if nice is the right word, because, hey, I've had – there's some guys in New York media that I have a decent relationship with, and they wouldn't bat an eye at writing a bad article, and they'd say, hey, JT, I just got to do this.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, like, it's, you're playing like shit right now. Yeah, what do you want me to do?
The New York media is different because there's so many different outlets, so there's so many people inside the clubhouse. And, JT, you might have had like 10 reporters at your locker – but there might have been 15, 20 at a Yankees game. It's just so different. Same thing with the Dodgers. You'll have 10 people at one game. In Anaheim, Pujols will be there. There'll be one person, and that's usually the TV network. It's just different markets, different everywhere. At the end of the day, if you mess up, just stand there, wear it, and move on, and then we forget all about it.
It goes away tomorrow.
It does. It really does. And when you're struggling, it like JT said, those guys say, hey, man, like, I got to do it, you know? And it's like, dude, I mean,
it can't job.
Be all the time. It can't be like, Ricky, he battled. He gave up 10 runs in 20.
No, I did battle. I did battle. It sucked.
But you guys also respect somebody who'd rather tell the truth all the time. And as long as you're there, I also learned that early. Because while I was working Sports Talk Radio, I told early, hey, if you're going to rip somebody, you better show up the next day and stand in that locker or that clubhouse and be like, look, yeah, I said it. I'm here. Like, I'm not hiding from you.
Like, you know why, and you know why it's cool too, because these media guys, when they're talking to you off the record, it becomes a me to you relationship. Yeah. You're like, okay, like this, it's cool. I dig this, you know, and I understand the business when he has to turn it on and be like, okay, this is the questions I gotta ask. But then there's the guys that are like, you know, try to like just it's all for show. I feel like and kind of see that and feel that. But
those guys usually don't last too long.
But for the most part, I feel like in Toronto, I had a good relationship with almost everyone, and I think that's part of the reason why I've been able to come back and have a good relationship with them.
Yeah, that's why you're getting better at TV. Tully's going to be a TV guy pretty soon. I'm going to get you guys going. Tully, this is your 11th podcast episode with us. Make sure you guys go back and listen if you're new to the podcast. We started episode 40 with Tully. The show updated in March. We've had talk about his Venezuela experiences, ghosts. We've had Joe Musgrove, Alan Trejo, Pat Hankin, Troy Tulowitzki. You've only interviewed four different people, so we're getting better. Go back and rate, review, listen to the other episodes, and you'll have a lot of fun, and you're going to see the progression of Tully. Tully started off in rookie ball. Tully's in the big leagues now, man. He's brilliant.
The more I listen to Josh, honestly, and I would tell him, not just because we're in front of a camera right now, but I wish, like, I would listen to him on a pregame show any day. Just because the way he understands the game, the way he talks about it, the looseness of it, he relates to players, but he can also be a pro at it. Yeah. When it comes to talking, hitting, catching, and when we met, I say it again, when I mentioned him coming on the podcast with us, I was like, what better guy that's seen has a relationship with pitchers and also has a relationship with position players and on the offensive side, but. I'd like to see him, and that's something me and him have talked about off the record or off camera, about maybe one day hopefully going up to Toronto and working together.
Forget Toronto. I need to get you guys on MLB Network. But the views and opinions of Bethel Duran are the views and opinions of Bethel Duran only. We'll leave that alone.
Well, thanks, Ricky. I appreciate that. Yeah. I do love doing this. This is so much
good.
Fun.
It is good, man. It is good. Yep. It's added a different dynamic, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. We've been trying to do it for a couple of years, and like I said, like in our group chat, like the momentum is building, and Ricky's like, what momentum? I'm like, for real, we got Tully momentum. We're going. Farmer Tully has to leave. He has to go. You're going to a driving range to go work.
No, golf course up by my house. I got a golf course close to my house that I help my buddy, and we're going to weed whack some ditches so I can find my golf ball Thursday.
Instead of going to the golf course to actually play, you're going to go do manual labor.
Yeah,
I don't get that.
I love working.
Yeah, there's no need. Like, I need to work. I got no money, but I don't like working. Forget that. I'm gonna go to the range right now. Ricky, what's up with this guy?
I wish I was going to the range.
Oh, come on, you come on, Rick. Look. Pretty soon we'll go back to your house in the Dominican Republic. We'll play golf down there. We'll be all right. There we go. All right, we'll see you guys next week. Tim Raines for sure. Lock it in. If you guys have any questions, let us know. Instagram, Let's Go Ricky Rowe. All the messages that you do send, I do see them, and I pass it on to the guys. Tully usually responds 3 days later.
No, I get right back to you. Don't listen. All these fans, don't buy into this. I live off the grid a little bit, but I don't live out in the woods with no light.
24 to 36 hours guaranteed.
No, you know what? Hold on. Let me look through the message.
Yeah, this morning he must have had a good reception this morning.
Oh, he did. Okay, no. Day of the podcast, he does leave his grid or his like wilderness, where his encampment, wherever he's at. But usually it takes a couple of days. And I know your wife is listening to this, and she's not in her head. She knows what's going on. Let's see.
That's right.
Yesterday I texted. He responded back immediately yesterday.
Yeah. See. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, after the Tulo episode, you texted him, and then I texted him, and then we didn't hear anything.
Yeah, you're right. 2 days later, after that one,
I said dynamite. I said that was dynamite. Great work. What do you guys want me to keep writing to you guys? I ain't got that kind of time.
Right. Tulo episode was last week. Totally. Tully, you're the best. Ricky, I'll talk to you soon. We'll see you guys. Another edition. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Let's go, Ricky Rowe.